This past Sunday, my focus was on what does the Bible teach about justice? And then we applied that to things going on in America today. And our band leader's, one of his best friends is an aspiring rap artist. And they co-wrote a song about justice and what's going on in America. And it was a sort of a rap rock song. And so our special music Sunday was actually just full on hip hop. And it was outstanding. If you couldn't get your booty moving at home with that, there was something wrong with you.
Are you new to working from home? Maybe you're figuring out how to manage a distributed team. Are you homeschooling your kids while trying to get something, anything else done? You've come to the right place. Work Life at Home talks with both newbies and experts as we explore the tools, tips, and techniques that will help you make the most of this new way of working. I'm Josh Freeman. Welcome home. In the last episode of Work Life at Home, we talked about the psychology of working from home. In this one, we're going to focus on spirituality. Working from home is demanding and isolating. It's easy to lose a sense of self, a sense of connectedness, and a sense of community. My guest today knows about all those things and much more. Mike Moses is the founding and lead pastor at Lake Forest Church in Huntersville, North Carolina. He started this evangelical Presbyterian gathering in a skating rink, preaching under a disco ball to 42 people. I guess they found his message compelling because he now runs a group of four congregations, totaling about 3,000 parishioners. Lake Forest Church is known for its deep commitment to helping communities locally and abroad. I met Mike through a member of his congregation who, oddly enough, is Jewish, and who flew with a group of theirs to help out families in the Bahamas who had been devastated by Hurricane Dorian. Mike can probably talk as fluidly about Tolkien's hobbits and dwarves as he can about St. Patrick. He loves U2, Chris Rock, and EDM, and he was here in Los Angeles during the 1992 Rodney King verdict riots. I hope to cover some of that and much more. Mike Moses, welcome to Work Life at Home.
Thank you, Josh. I really appreciate the invitation to have a conversation with you this morning.
Thanks. Let's start just for a second. I kind of want to say something for the benefit of my listeners, just for context, which is I'm interested in spirituality and ethics, but I'm not a religious person myself. And I think that many of my listeners may share that same sense of curiosity and openness without being committed to a religion. So my questions might be full of incorrect religious terminology and other evidence that I don't know what I'm talking about. So feel free to correct me if I stumble.
Well, and in that same, in your statement about that, that's what I so appreciate your invitation, understanding the nature of this podcast and its subject matter is so important. And again, I'm just grateful to discuss the spirituality aspect for all of us of this very trying time.
Yeah, which it definitely is. All right. Well, let's start with some context about Lake Forest Church. What is evangelical Presbyterianism?
Well, when anyone actually figures out that we are Presbyterian, we don't present that way as a worshiping congregation. They'll call us rock and roll Presbyterian. We're a super modern worshiping congregation, leveraging technology. We worship in the predominant musical heart language of the soul of Charlatans in our part of Charlotte, North Carolina, which is where we are, which is sort of modern rock with a little alternative edge. Evangelical Presbyterian is a small Presbyterian denomination. It's a medium-sized Presbyterian denomination. And I call us evangelical with a small E and Presbyterian with a little P. The Presbyterian with a small P, and everybody kind of chuckles, but they get it, that we're about being Christian first and foremost, and we acknowledge and celebrate fellowship with professing Christians of any stripe. We partner with the local Roman Catholic congregation, among others. And so we're Christian with a big C, but we had to pick our lane. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of what a denomination is. And so we chose the Presbyterian lane. I did not grow up Presbyterian. I'm passionately Christian about Jesus, worshiping and following Jesus. And I'm a committed Presbyterian as our way of submitting to an authority over us, not being a self-appointed group. Mm-hmm. Hey, we made some religious stuff up. Come check this out. But located firmly in the stream of historic Christianity, the faith once given once for all, connected. So that's super important to us, connectionalism.
And while we're doing this, what's church planting?
That's just where baby churches come from, Josh.
You probably
never asked that question. I had never asked that question, but they come from somewhere. And it's from generally a spiritual leader who has an entrepreneurial bent. So if I were in the business world, I would have been an entrepreneur. And that's what I am in the spiritual world. They have to start somewhere because there's growing population and our area is fast growing. The evangelical, the small e, I'll try to be brief. Evangelical is a word. I don't use that word for our congregation very often because today it's primarily used in political discourse. Yeah. And the way that it's used either positively by some or negatively by others does not fit us as a congregation. We are actually quite diverse politically in our several thousand people, which is making this fall actually a trying season for us as a congregation. There are strongly held convictions both directions in our congregation. And our task is to stay unified around our spiritual journey and around serving the aching needs of a hurting world and not dividing over a political stripe. So we don't identify as that conservative evangelical political title. So when I say evangelical with a small e, it's a phrase that became conversant at the time of the Protestant Reformation, and it meant gospel-centered. That's actually the word for gospel in the Latin and the Greek, evangelion, something like that. And so it just means we're centered on the good news about Jesus, which is what the four gospels are. And we want to be a Jesus-centered church, a Jesus-centered denomination, and we want to point people to Jesus, not some brand of politics.
So what do you think Jesus would be doing in a pandemic like this right now?
Great. He'd be loving and serving the heck out of people.
Yeah.
Calling out hypocrisy, which he did brilliantly. But Martin Luther was asked that question at the time of the Reformation in the 1500s during a plague in Europe. Mm-hmm. And he answered it more, not what would Jesus do, but what should followers of Jesus do? And interesting, I did not pull up the quote to be precise, but it's almost exact. It's so prescient for today. Martin Luther, one of the great Protestant innovators, really, in Christianity, he said, in the plague, a Christian should sanitize their house and their clothes, only go out when necessary so as not to spread, and when going out, cover their face. And then he also said, however, if a Christian is called upon, whether because they work in government or medicine, or they know of a neighbor in need, they should be willing to go into harm's way to serve and love a neighbor. So I think that's a pretty good answer.
It sounds like real good advice right there. Let's switch into working from home for a second specifically. Mm-hmm. So at the beginning of this thing, you had to do that because everybody had to do that. And somehow at the start of COVID, you managed to both work from home yourself and help people who were also stuck at home. And you did that right before Easter. And from what I understand, you managed to kind of keep everybody feeling connected and maintaining a sense of community. And how on earth did you do that?
Wow. I didn't do it, thankfully. I do lead our organization. But as an organization, this was a test of who we say we are and aspire to be. I'm not sure about your organization, how it was tested. I so appreciate the fact that you guys have decades of experience working remotely. And so you're thought leaders in this area. We did not have that head start that you did.
I can imagine.
But what we realized as we talked with our whole leadership-oriented staff was, okay, this is when we're going to find out, is our church really healthy in the way we aspire to be? Josh, an unhealthy church is one that is pastor or priest-centric, where the pastor teaches everything. He's the one who visits everybody. He's the one who cares for everybody. They're only oriented towards super pastor. That is sick and wrong. It's not the New Testament picture of the Christian church, but it feeds into the codependency needs of pastors who want to be needed, like me. and there are actually studies there are a high number of clergy who come from alcoholic homes and who have extra high codependency needs. So there are studies about that, which is why I'm aware I have to protect against that. Josh, the picture of the early church is that there are these 50 different teachings that are called the one another's in the New Testament. And it's how we're to care for one another, serve one another, bear one another's burdens, confess our sins to one another, encourage one another, rebuke one another. Hey, that ain't right, et cetera. That's a direct quote from Chris Rock, by the way. That ain't right. One of my favorite routines of his.
Oh, good.
But the church is made to really peer spiritual mentor one another in the way of Jesus. And the pastor is just kind of a convener. Right. And teaching. So I realized in March, we're going to find out, have we successfully nurtured a large congregation where people are their base orientation is one another in homes, praying for one another, studying the scriptures for one another, going with one another on mission to serve needs. And so I'm just so happy to say we're not a perfect church. In any way, and I would never say we're the best one, but we're a unique one. And so, Josh, I called that out as the shutdown happened and said, hey, this is the way we continue to be and do church the way we always have, except elevate that. Take initiative. Connect with one another relationally. Don't stop meeting in groups. Meet more together, but online for mutual encouragement and connectivity, because spirituality – yet there's an individual side to spirituality. We can talk about that. But spiritual vitality and growth and encouragement mostly happens through the spirit arcing like electricity between human beings.
I can see that completely. Yep.
Yeah. And so I have been super encouraged that our congregation has stayed unified, leaned in with one another, in a super high way. And so we continue to call them to that. That's my primary charge during the pandemic. And therefore I see a pretty large degree of spiritual health and vitality in our congregation, yet with all the challenges of working, schooling from home, et cetera.
So how did you actually technically set that up to happen? How did you, like, when this all started, you're not going into church and nobody else is going into church and you used Zoom, it sounds like, so that's great. But how did you kind of, how did you get all these people who may or may not be technically savvy, who may or may not have great Wi-Fi connections, I don't know. How did you get them all to sort of show up at the same time? Were they already just inclined to do that, or did somebody else do that? How did that happen?
Well, I would say the primary thing that happened is, and I think any of you who are leaders of an organization will be able to appreciate, how do you lead and manage a staff to be healthy and productive in this time, especially when it started?
Yeah.
And so what I've realized over time is I'm not pressing my staff to be necessarily the same level of productive today as a year ago. I'm not extra pressing them to hit this or that metric, et cetera, particularly the routine productivity tasks. What I pressed them for from the beginning, and this was several, our elders and I counseling, what's important right now? What I pressed them on is let's make sure that we help our church realize we're not a platform-centered church. We're a people-centered church or we're a personal relationship-centered church. And so staff, I don't have all the answers, but I am exhorting you and saying your priority now is to pivot with creativity.
Yeah.
To not assume people are going to show up to programs or large group meetings or even online. Pivot with creativity to find ways for you and then all the many leaders that each of our staff mentors to assertively take initiative for relational connection with every person in your part of our congregation. So that breaks out to our children's ministry, to our teenage ministry called Remix. That breaks out to the people who care for widows in our congregation, et cetera, et cetera. And so my number one charge was just idea driven. I want you to pivot from productivity to creativity. And then I want us all to mentor each other in our weekly staff meetings. What have you found is an effective way to take initiative? And in the business world, this would be initiative taking with clients, I would assume, or customers, or however you'd say that. But in our case, it's congregation members. And I'm so proud of our staff. I know that you, Josh, from what I understand of your work and your colleague whom I know, you guys have a high value on creativity. And I think a lot of what you do is you do creative problem solving.
Yep. That's right.
For companies. Well, that's what we had to engage in.
And what specifically, like, can you give me an example of a way in which somebody was particularly surprisingly creative in addressing this?
Two of my favorite examples.
Okay.
A woman named Cammie is our head, is a minister on our staff, and one of her responsibilities is women's ministry. She recognized that there were likely a lot of women in our congregation succumbing to extreme loneliness. Either they're lonely in their marriage or they're single or for whatever reason. And how would we find who those women are? One of her strategies was, she also realized predominantly the women in our congregation are on Facebook and connect that way. Mm-hmm. So she came up with a coffee, curbside coffee with Cammie. And she put this thing out on Facebook. And I don't know exactly how this worked, Josh, but essentially women could sort of put, quote unquote, put their name in the hat and somebody would be drawn for Cammie to personally deliver a latte, whatever their favorite coffee drink is.
That's great.
And stand and talk from the curb to the porch. And what she did was strategically prefer women who she could tell were lonely by their activity on Facebook. And Josh, I mean, I so admired this in March and April. Cammie did that like all day long, a couple of days a week. How awesome is that?
Fantastic. Yeah.
Here's a second example.
Okay.
It's a little more system, moving the gathering to, this is a little more people gathering because that's still what we need to do. We have a man in our church. He's an executive with the energy company here, Duke Energy. Incredibly effective guy. He's also an elder in our church. And his primary volunteering of spiritual serving in our church, he leads our foundations class of our fifth graders every spring. This is a time, Josh, when you're deciding, hey, I kind of am in the Christian faith because my family is. Is this something that I'm beginning to own for myself or not? That's what the foundations class is about. Mm-hmm. We had 70 in that class this year, and Daryl was leading it along with a couple of others. So when the shutdown happened, that was last spring, Daryl and they had graduated into our middle school ministry. Daryl realized this is a distinct group with distinct needs. So here's what he did. He reached out to the now sixth graders and their families and said, we're going to form small groups of 5 to 7 who will meet with me or another online adult spiritual mentor who just cares about them and talk about the scriptures and talk about their life and how they're doing. We're going to have a weekly small group that they can be put into. So right now there are between 60 or 70 sixth grade boys. This is just boys, actually. I'm sorry. It's boys and girls who weekly show up on a Zoom with an adult mentor who expresses care about them, who cares how they're doing, and they talk about their spiritual growth in the way of Jesus. And those parents are so grateful, Josh. You may be aware of research that shows that even the insertion of one positive, non-familial adult mentor in a teenager's life, is highly correlates with positive outcomes versus negative outcomes in a teen's life. And so this is profound and it's happening weekly.
That's fascinating.
And obviously for these kids to want to do it, they found a way for the agenda to be creative, free-flowing, freewheeling.
So talk about the impact that this has on Cammie and Daryl personally doing this. Because that's the other side of this is like, yeah, you can reach out to the community and certainly the community benefits. But in doing that, you benefit tremendously and it changes your experience of being isolated. And I'm wondering if that's, you know, if you've experienced that from them, if they've talked about that.
Yes, Daryl is a single man and he feels an increased sense of meaning in his life. Which, Josh, all of us want, irrespective of our faith commitment or if generally we're open to spirituality. A human being is a meaning-seeking missile. We're looking to experience meaning or create it. And so he is not someone sitting back only feeling like he's a victim of the pandemic. He's struggling with the emotions that all of us are, but he can point to something tactile. I would say this is a way in which I sort of practice an existential Christianity in that Daryl's an example of creating meaning by his actions. And we can think meaningful thoughts and we can want to love our neighbor as ourself, but it's when we actually do it that we create the meaning in our own life and the other person's.
That's an interesting thing. This idea of how to approach the pandemic creatively, it's really interesting and it's really difficult in this situation because you tend to get sort of lost in your own day-to-day trouble, whatever it is. You know, everybody's got a version of it if they're feeling like they're cut off. And I mean, in our case, you know, it's really difficult to interact with clients who in their businesses are all struggling, trying to figure out how to deal with a pandemic, how to keep their sales going, how to keep their employees employed. There's been a lot of layoffs. The whole thing is kind of it's just fraught with difficulty. And the genesis of this podcast was exactly what you're talking about. It's like, what can we do as a little company to reach out to the community and make some kind of an impact, do something that has some value for people? And in the course of doing that, it's certainly given me a wonderful external focus, just this sense of being able to reach out into the world and create something that maybe will change somebody's life a little bit, you know, and help them and give them some insight or some advice that they can use. And maybe just know that people like them are out there thinking the same kinds of things they're thinking of.
Josh, so that's super awesome that you're doing this. And here you sit in the words of the phraseology of existentialism, you are making meaning right now. And that's a very human thing. And it's, I would say that it feeds part of the spiritual nature within us. Can I tell you my experience of my own personal challenge?
I would love it.
Of being shut down and in my home study about a month in. So I did all the stuff that I said to you. What's the leadership focus? Because that's the most important thing I do. What do I focus the leaders of our congregation on? Not just what do I do?
Yeah.
And that took a lot out of me, as well as communicating on Sunday. We're doing live online worship. We have a full band at 10 a.m. on Sundays. Full band.
Get into that with you. That's
musicians.
Really interesting. Go ahead.
We can get to that in a little bit. But they're 6 feet apart. And then I speak, but we're doing it to the camera and we're encouraging congregation to worship live at 10 a.m. So if you can imagine, it's a little bit stressful for me to speak to our congregation weekly, a word about God and holding them up to God. That's a little bit of pressure in my life for 22 years, but I love it. But in a pandemic, people are so hungry for an extra pointed word about their life and about who God is for them and how that can help them move forward. So I felt a huge amount of extra pressure. I've also had a lot of extra pastoral Zoom and lately more in-person meetings with people in our congregation, particularly struggling with anxiety, thoughts of self-harm. There's been a lot of that just yesterday.
Yeah.
Two appointments like that. So a month into the pandemic, Josh, I was aware I am stressed the heck out. I'm a pretty chill guy. And even I was experiencing what could only be described as a high level of anxiety. Exhibited most, the way I read myself that I was becoming at risk, as I was increasingly having disturbed sleep and waking up from disturbing dreams multiple times a night. And I knew it was pandemic related because the dreams would be some version of something bad was going on or somebody was coming to get somebody and we were trying to solve a problem. And I would always wake up because we couldn't solve in frustration.
Yeah.
And my wife and I discussed this and I realized that at my healthiest, one of the ways I nurture my emotional, mental, and spiritual health is I go away to the Blue Ridge Mountains once every 2 months for several days for time of prayer, for study, for writing ahead and thinking, dreaming ahead about vision. I've done that for all these 22 years I've pastored Lake Forest Church. And I realized I hadn't done it in some time prior to the shutdown. And of course, the shutdown had been going on. And I just realized that has, whether God created me that way, I have created that as a number one pathway to be a healthy man. Mm-hmm. So I said, honey, okay, Friday, which is my day off, I'm going to Google a little known hiking trail somewhere within 100 miles of here up in the foothills of the mountain. And let's spend the day hiking. I need a mountains reset. And so we went, and the way I know she loves me is she hiked with me, even though it was raining. That's not her go-to.
Nice.
That she would not normally do that. She did that because she knew I was struggling.
Yeah.
And we did this long hike. It was strenuous. It was awesome. And then when it was over, I'm like, I don't want to go home yet. And so we Googled just little teeny tiny two horse towns nearby in these foothills of the mountains. We just drove through those. What's going on there? Poked around, a couple things. And then I was like, I still don't want to go home for dinner. So we had this super romantic dinner in the parking lot of a Ruby Tuesdays in a little mountain town in our car, listening to NPR. And then we went home at night. And Josh, that night I slept like a baby.
Yeah.
A happy baby.
Yeah.
I have not had those dreams since. And we have been prioritizing some form of a hiking experience weekly. And that, I would say, that's the touchstone to my emotional and mental health right now.
That's a fantastic thing for people to understand because last episode, I talked to Nikki Lee, who's a psychotherapist. And one of the things she said that's really critical is that people get outside. That they get into any kind of nature, they get some trees, they get anything, go to a park, whatever they can do to get out of their physical house and get out in the world and, be connected to the larger world and get some space. It's just really important. And I know the last 4 or 5 days, because of the fires, the air quality here is just terrible. And so we've been not going outside. We've been staying in with the air filter on and all that stuff. And it's weird. It's depressing.
2020, man.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a weird year. No kidding.
Oh, that's terrible. But that need for nature it's implanted in us as human beings. In fact, in the Hebrew scriptures, the first chapter of the Hebrew scriptures, which are at the core of all of the world Abrahamic faiths, the monotheistic faiths, the first chapter says the first thing about human beings is God created this as a gift to us, this natural habitat. And he put us there and we were right smack in the middle of it and we were naked and we loved it. And so whether or not you should be naked when you get out of nature, I don't know. But being out in God's created world also connects to our spirituality. Mm-hmm. We can ignore the spiritual aspect, although most people that I know, whether they are committed to one religion or not, report to me that they most experience something of divinity or an otherness, or there's more. They experience it as wonder and joy most often in nature.
Absolutely. I'm sure that's true. I mean, just listen to people talk about looking up at the sky at night. And if you're anywhere where there's no light pollution, it's mind blowing. And you can't help but have some sense that you're part of something much larger. And whether you perceive it as, if there's God or if there's it's just a giant, giant thing that we're a little piece of, you get a sense of proportion and awe and joy. and connectedness, you know, when you get out there. So, yeah.
Totally, so maybe that's helpful to hear from me as a Christian pastor who I study and teach the Bible for a living. And yet being out in nature is a super important part of my own spiritual, emotional, and mental health.
Well, let's talk about music for a second. So you have this band or group, or I don't know what you have, whatever you have.
Yeah, we call
playing
them the band.
Music, a band that's playing music at your services. And I am imagining in person, what happens is people get up and they dance and they sing along. And like, there is a lot of interconnectedness to the way that music forms part of a service. I mean, at least in any kind of traditional church environment, there's a lot of singing. There's a lot of this idea of, I think people, this is an interesting thing, is like the idea of people coming together to create something bigger than themselves. And I think that's a lot of what music is, not just something that you listen to, but something that you partake in some way. And even if you're singing in the shower or, you know, singing along to your favorite record in the car, or whatever it is, you're involving yourself in something bigger than yourself. And it's a really cool part of why music is so great. And so how do you make that happen when you're on Zoom? What's happening on the parishioner side of things?
Josh, this is what people in our congregation are missing the most and struggling the most with. We're a pretty high-tech congregation, and so we've broadcast our services for members who miss a Sunday to rewatch later and stay on track with what we're doing. And so they've been very used to that. And so it's really not a big deal for them to watch a sermon, that part of the worship service right now. That it feels normal. We all watch things, you know, lectures or something like that, a YouTube video. That feels normal. What people are reporting to me, where they're feeling disoriented spiritually is they're not with others doing just what you described. In a room, experiencing the communal nature of lifting our voices and in a beautiful way harmonizing about what we care about most, which is the same thing that the Psalms and the Hebrew Scriptures are our model. They're the prayer book and the hymn book of the Bible, Josh. And the Psalms, they don't teach us about God. They teach us how to be fully human in every human experience toward God. And so the Psalms are songs that are lifting up pain. They're lifting up doubt. They're lifting up deep questions. How come the evil succeed and I'm trying to do right and I don't? And everything goes wrong for me. That's Psalm 73. Joy. Oh, God, you're so good. And hope. And so our congregation are disoriented, not having that experience with their fellow followers of Jesus. My wife tries to combat that by, she worships at home. I come in to do the taping. And so she puts her laptop up on the fireplace mantle in our living room. She lights a candle to signify the presence of the Holy Spirit and the communion with other believers. And then she stands for the musical part. We're doing a few less songs for online worship because it's just weird to stand there and sing it out loud in your living room with your three family members or by yourself. But she is, again, behavior matters. She's creating a bit more meaningfulness, even though it's online and she's not with other people, by actually standing and actually singing out loud. And therefore, she's experiencing it a little bit better than people who report to me. They just kind of stay seated on their couch and they sort of listen or maybe hum along. We still have within us control over whether we're participating in that. So for any of your listeners who are part of a worshiping community, I really encourage you to let my wife be your tutor and give yourself into it. Josh, just the way you said, the way that you belt it out loud in your car, the way I sing like crazy in my car, let yourself do that. Crank up the volume is what's super important.
That's great. Wow. That's a really interesting vision. So have you,
Josh, if I can, I called us Rock and Roll Presbyterian earlier.
Yeah.
This past Sunday, my focus was on what does the Bible teach about justice? And then we applied that to things going on in America today. And our band leader's, one of his best friends is an aspiring rap artist. And they co-wrote a song about justice and what's going on in America. And it was a sort of a rap rock song. And so we actually, our special music Sunday was actually just full on hip hop. And it was outstanding. If you couldn't get your booty moving at home with that, there was something wrong with you.
God, that's just great. Have you, what I was going to ask you about, man, you, every one of these things is just opening up all sorts of places to go with the conversation, but just to keep it on music for a second, there's a few things online. One of them is called Jammer. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple of other of these things that allow people to play music together online. And somehow they've solved the technological latency issue, because normally you would have the delay and you'd be out of sync and all that stuff, and it would drive you crazy. Mm-hmm. But apparently they have a way. I think what they do is they loop it. And so you end up, somebody's playing on the other end and they play, let's say, a riff or something. And then that ends up coming to you while they're playing the next line. And so you're playing with them in real time in your own experience, and they're like a measure ahead of you or something. And so I don't know if this works, but it sounds really fun. I'm definitely planning to try it.
Josh, I just wrote that down. We're looking for ways to shake up what we're doing during the hour of worship, so that it's not same old, same old, and to somehow be participatory. And I'm going to look into that. Thank you.
Cool. Sure. So let's switch back to justice for a second. I pulled out a John Lewis quote, and he says, when we were sitting in, it was love in action. When we went on the freedom ride, it was love in action. The march from Selma to Montgomery was love in action. We do it not simply because it's the right thing to do, but it's love in action. That we love our country, we love a democratic society, and so we have to move our feet. And it just struck me as like, wow, that's so, first of all, powerful. And secondly, sounds like it's very aligned with how you guys think about your community involvement, your social action involvement, and kind of also relates to the Rodney King riots. I'm curious to see if all that's true and what you think about that.
That's super powerful. Thank you for that quote. And for John Lewis, all of that was motivated by out of his spirituality, the spirituality of Jesus, mm-hmm. as was the civil rights movement, mm-hmm. which is so inspiring to me. I began to learn about that. I grew up in Greensboro, North Carolina, where I didn't learn until college. I was a history major at the College of William and Mary, and I had to do a paper on something in modern American history. And I was going home for spring break, and I just happened to read a headline. So I looked into the fact that, what? My hometown is where the first lunch counter sit-in happened, at the Woolworth.
Oh.
It was North Carolina A&T students. Jesse Jackson was there. Mm-hmm. Young man. And I went to the Woolworth, researched the paper in the Greensboro Library, and it opened up this whole world to me of the nature of injustice in our society and what had been gained during that time. And since then, I've been on a journey like others to learn what still needs to be gained in the way of justice. And being in LA at the time of the Rodney King verdict riots was also formative to me. Terms of being a white Southern man, owning up to the facts of racial inequity and injustice that are ongoing in our country, not just historic. Josh, I think I mentioned to you before, when we were in LA, I was in graduate school, but my wife and I volunteered in a youth group in South Central LA that was half African-American, half Latino. Mm-hmm. Super interesting deal. And we began loving on and mentoring high schoolers in that youth group. When the riots hit, when the verdict hit, and there was this sense of rage and are things ever going to change in that community? Because, I mean, there it was on tape, the unjust abuse of a black man at the hands of the authorities. This was our kid's neighborhood that got burned down and the surrounding mm-hmm. parts of LA. When the National Guard would let people back into South Central LA, me and a couple of friends got a couple of pickup trucks and we picked up our kids from their homes. Mm-hmm. And we spent a day or two with them going to mom and pop businesses that have been ransacked and helping them clean up one small business at a time so that our kids could be engaged in something productive and an act of healing while they were still in shock over what had happened around them. And so seeing that from the eyes of kids I was mentoring, I would say had an awakening effect on me.
Yeah, it has to have. And I was not, I was here during the riots, but I wasn't engaged. And it's really an interesting thing to think of this idea of kind of plunging into that world. And you were already connected to it, so it probably wasn't quite as weird. But the idea of going down into the middle of that rage and that danger, essentially, was not something I was contemplating at the time at all. But in retrospect, it's a great, would have been a great response to it, to just go down into it and be part of putting it all back together. It just sounds amazingly powerful to me.
Dude, it was intense. The telephone poles were still smoking. It was intense. It was formative for me in hopefully productive ways. And what I resonate with in John Lewis's quote that you pulled out is that justice seeking, and now I'll expand that, all spirituality. So it, in any way that we're talking about building a little bit of spirituality into your stay-at-home, stressful life, at root, spirituality, including justice seeking, that should be an outcome of spirituality. At root, it is about love, and then it's about the actions of love. One of my favorite descriptions of the spiritual part of the self of every human being, no matter what you're involved with, are some Coldplay lyrics. One of my favorite songs of theirs that I don't think it made it onto the airwaves, but it's kind of something like this, like, all you ever wanted was love, but you never looked hard enough. It's never going to give itself up. All you ever wanted to be living in perfect symmetry. I'm like, that's me. Probably you, Josh. I want to live in symmetry with myself, with the world, with the people God's given me to love, with society. And all I ever wanted, really, at the root of spiritual human desire, is all I ever wanted is love. But then I like the little hook that Chris Martin put in there. But you never looked hard enough.
Yeah.
Because at the root of all spirituality is love. In fact, the revelation to the entire world that hit humanity like a thunderclap through the mouth of Jesus is God is love. That was new.
Yeah, God was fear before that, pretty much.
That was new. Not only God is personal, that's the great gift of the Jews to humanity. And it's still very distinct from many Eastern religions. God is personal, and then Jesus says God is love. And so what Chris Martin writes is the human cry. All I ever wanted was love. And then Chris says, but you got to look hard enough. Mm-hmm. Like, spirituality is innate to us, but to grow or expand spiritually, it doesn't just fall on you like an anvil coming out of the sky in a Bugs Bunny cartoon. You had to actually go look hard for that stuff.
Yeah.
It includes practices, right? Mm-hmm. Such as extending the wonder that when you're out in nature to maybe lift your eyes up and give thanks. Even if you don't care to name who you're giving thanks to, that's a huge, Josh, you make a huge spiritual move. That's a big existential move. It's tiny in the moment, but right, existentially, it's massive.
And it changes your entire view of the world. That the idea of gratitude.
Yes.
I mean, that's, you know, this is psychologically proven that people who express gratitude on a regular basis have a much happier life. That basically it doesn't change. It changes everything without having to change anything. It just changes your experience of it.
Yeah. And so I don't need to argue your listeners into that being centered at Jesus. That's a whole other thing. But that move begins to make us more truly human. The type of church that we are, we say that we're a church for people who've given up on church, but not on God. That's our tagline, Josh.
Nice.
So I have a lot of these conversations with people, and I love to tutor somebody in just that tiny little move. Or if you're a person who cares about justice, can you make the move that John Lewis did? And again, the movement is tiny. To say, I'm pursuing this justice because of love. And maybe I could believe Jesus, that God or divinity is love. And therefore, that's my bottom line rationale for this justice action right here. And thank you for love is why I'm doing it. Again, that's a small move, takes a moment, but existentially in the human soul or spirit, it's really big and it leads to life change.
I got another one for you here. I found a quote from Rainn Wilson, who Rainn Wilson, obviously,
oh,
you know,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The metamorphosis of Jesus Christ from a humble servant of the abject poor to a symbol that stands for gun rights, prosperity theology, anti-science, limited government that neglects the destitute, and fierce nationalism is truly the strangest transformation in human history.
I have a magnet on my filing cabinet that my congregation doesn't know is there. Yeah. So don't tell anybody, okay?
But no, let's not.
A friend gave it to me, and it's a picture of the Sacred Heart Jesus, mm-hmm. and it says, "Stop using Jesus as an excuse to be a bigoted asshole."
Yeah.
So that's my response to that quote.
Okay, that's a great response. Thank you. Yeah, there is definitely a tendency not to use just Jesus, but to use everything, everyone's kind of strongly held belief to be a bigoted asshole and make other people wrong. That's kind of the starting point right now, and it just feels terrible.
Josh. And my reply when people go, oh my gosh, religion seems like it's been part of so much of human wrong and suffering through the years. And there's a truth. I mean, I'm an historian by both my undergrad and my doctorate work. And there's truth to that. But the deeper truth is that, and this is something that I think you and other folks who think about spirituality, this is something that without spirituality, we don't really have a way to grapple with this except rank materialism, which is there's something in human nature that that touches evil. There's something that that is open to, and in this case, I'll say the base sin of tribalism. For everything we know about human history from the beginning is human beings are tempted to objectify the people not like us, not in our tribe, as other, so mm-hmm. that therefore we kill them and take their stuff.
Right.
And I would say almost every instance of religion, and so to justify that base, horrible desire, which is still rife in humanity and is not done away with by any other means than spiritual, in my experience and view, we're going to grab religion to rationalize our ability to do that. And that's my explanation for that. Mm-hmm. It may not be fully right.
Well, it sounds right because it's always our group against them, whoever them is. And it's very hard for us. I shouldn't say we can't because people transcend this all the time, but it's really difficult. It's not in our core reactivity, I guess, to accept people who are different from us. And how we define that varies from tribe to tribe, as you said, you know, but.
And Christians are to hold ourselves accountable for attempting to let the good news of Jesus and what he's done for us change us, that we would be others centered rather than others hating. Mm-hmm. Others I mean as a sociological category. However, we make no claims to the fact that being a Christian makes you perfect all of a sudden.
Right.
We are accountable to increasingly put on display the love of Jesus, but we do so haltingly at best.
Yeah, yeah. But it's all of these things, all religions, all positive philosophies of any kind are aspirational. There's no expectation anybody can totally be that way all the time. And then people get into this thing of kind of beating themselves up because they aren't, you know, mm-hmm. but which I think is self-destructive, but this thing of having a kind of a light out there, having a path forward that allows you to move along towards something positive that improves your standing as a human being and makes you, you know, you said before, people want to participate. They want to have meaning in their life, that little shining light out there is the thing that draws them forward and gives them a way to find that meaning. And that, you know, to me, to my view, that obviously can be Jesus, and it can be Muhammad, and it can be, you know, Buddha, and it can be whatever is moving you toward some sense of participation and fulfillment and contribution to the world. And anyway, that's my my stance on preaching right there.
You're getting started as a preacher, Josh. One of my favorite things, my wife and I's favorite habit, which is shut down right now, is cultural immersive travel internationally. And so when we do that, I really enjoy, when we were in China at the end of last year, I immersed myself in the writings of Confucius. When we circumnavigated Turkey in a rental car, I reread the Quran when we were there. When I was in another part of the East, I read the writings of Buddha. I really learned and was inspired by each of those and others. Me, as a Christian, the light that you just described, I have found and chosen, and it has found me in the person of Jesus, God's self-revelation through Jesus. And as a Christian pastor, we think all the time about how can we make sure that our church, our religious practice is about following Jesus and not something that has become institutional only. Institutions are good if they institutionalize a really important function, like the mm-hmm. judiciary, for example. Mm-hmm. But to become only about the perpetuation of the institution is negative in any environment. And so we're attempting to do just what you said. We see Jesus as the light of God, the most clear light of God, is our belief. Mm-hmm. And how can we just keep it so focused on looking to Jesus as the core of our faith and the touchstone of our very life rather than all the other stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what advice do you have specifically for somebody who's been stuck at home for 6 months, who has been working at home, playing at home, fighting with their spouse at home, being mm-hmm. isolated, alone at home, dealing with their kids who they're out of control and trying to keep them focused on school, and they can only do that for a few hours at a time, and then they kind of go nuts around the house, keep everybody from working. This is kind of the world that everybody's living in right now. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to sort of end our conversation on some sort of hopeful way of coping with that for people and how to make a little bit of difference in that experience. And what would you tell them to do?
I think, I don't know everything, but in my experience and from our spirituality, and I'll broaden it from Christian spirituality to spirituality in general, I think.
Great.
And let's call this existential spirituality.
Okay.
I'll return to that theme. Every person has the power to create a bit more meaning in their life, which adds to a sense of purpose and fights against the sense of futility that we are all feeling. The several teenagers who I've counseled with who are succumbing to anxiety and despair, it's out of a sense of futility because nothing's changing. Most people have one or two persons in their life who are positive, who are wise, who give you life. I would say what's super important to rebuild into life right now, not at the end of the pandemic, is if you have allowed the inertia and the sense of futility or the everyday is the same to cause you to not take initiative with the most positive one or two people in your life. I think that is perhaps the most important thing that you could do, is to interact with those persons on video. I would suggest find a way to get outside 6 feet apart in person. Mm-hmm. Take the initiative, go to the trouble, because God mediates so much of what is best in life through other people to us. And if you don't have a person or two who is a life giver to you, you probably know a couple of people who, if you knew them better, you suspect they would be a life giver. Mm-hmm. Taking initiative to meet outside at a coffee shop, outside at a craft brewery, go for a hike or be on Zoom if your family needs to be that shut down for specific reasons. And that takes initiative. And the human spirit, back to the theme of spirituality, the human spirit is prompted, is goosed a little bit when we take initiative to some very positive behavior in our life. So I mean, that's super practical and maybe too small, but could have a lot of power and outcome.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. The thing that keeps everybody from taking initiative, I think, is fear. This kind of sense of fear and shame, and it drives people's behavior in these weird ways that are so out of proportion to the reality. They project that everybody thinks stuff about them, and nobody's actually thinking about them much. So that's silly. And being able to just step out and make that little phone call, you know, reach out to that person and just connect for a second. It takes so little effort, but it takes so much effort. You know, you have to not let that thing that's saying you're not good enough, you're not, you know, nobody's going to hear from you, you're angry at them. There's all of these kind of layers of silliness that we put on top of that behavior. And just take a second and take a breath and reach out and connect. And
that's
essentially what you're saying, right?
That's well said. And if I could offer one more suggestion that is more interior oriented, whether you, your listeners, is a committed person of one religion or stream of Christianity or not, a way to spark your own spirituality. I think almost everyone that I meet with, no matter where they are religiously, owns up that yeah, I've got a sense of spirituality, part of being human. A way to spark that a little bit in this time when we need it is to the base of all religious practice is prayer. Speaking to the ultimate reality that has spoken me into existence. Speaking back is to engage in spirituality. And so whether you're speaking out loud to Jesus, whether you're speaking out loud to Buddha, or the force, I don't care, or call it the universe. You can actually spark your own spirituality by speaking, and ideally aloud, words of gratitude. Or let the Hebrew psalmist be a model for you. Speak words of your pain and anxiety. Speak who you are in response to the ultimate reality that's out there. And if you're a materialist, just call it the universe. And that will begin to ignite a little bit more of your innate spirituality.
Lovely. That's great. Thank you, Mike. This has been a great conversation. I really appreciate it. Let's tell people where they can get a hold of you online if they would like to continue it directly.
Okay. I appreciate the conversation too. And I'm adding this to my own podcast listening routine. So I'm, cause I'm super interested in the subject matter and in your deep well of experience through you and others. So, you can find me basically the web address of our church. Lake Forest Church is Huntersville, North Carolina, but it's, at lakeforest.org. It's simple. Lake and forest, one R, .org. I can be found on the staff page there. I've dropped out of really being an active blogger and such. So really just our church website. You could click into on the media section if you were interested in seeing what our a Sunday morning recorded service looks like for us right now. You can find that on our website.
Fantastic. Okay. Thanks again. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, Mike. Thank you.
You as well, Josh. Thanks for having me.
Well, that's it for now. If you're new to working from home, you might want to check out worklifeathome.com, where you'll find articles, show notes, and, best of all, a community where you can ask questions and get some answers from people who've been doing this a while. We'd love to see you there. And I would be thrilled to hear what you think and find out who else you'd like to hear from on the show. You can email me at josh at worklifeathome.com. If you're enjoying Work Life at Home, please do let your friends and coworkers know so they can subscribe. Thank you for listening. We'll be back soon.